Celebrate the historic 100th Greeley Stampede, June 23rd through July 4th, featuring concerts, rodeo, carnival, and more. Tickets available at GreeleyStampede.org.
Live from the Allo Communications Studios, it is Good Morning NOCO. I'm Tanner Schwint. Brian Gary out. He is in Washington, D.C., for Honor Flight, as they were checking out the World War II Memorial with a couple of World War II veterans. That is just, it's incredible. Joining us now up on the hotline, the Director of Special Projects for 9 News, Chris Vanderveen. Chris, were you one of the people who went out and you had to watch the lunar eclipse last night, the super flower blood moon, I believe is what it was called?
Yeah, I think you have to go see it just because it doesn't happen that often. But then it's sort of like you see it, then you're like, okay, that's cool. And then you go back. You don't have to stare at it forever. It's not changing a whole lot.
No, it's not. And that's okay. That's you're the first realist that I've talked about with this, because everybody else, it's either like you're geeking out over it, they're taking pictures of it, trying to with their cell phone. I tried to take a picture with my cell phone, didn't work. But I went out, saw it. I'm like, well, that's pretty cool. And then you move on with your night.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we have not. We've done a lot of amazing things with cell phones over the years. One of the things we've not been able to perfect is how to get a good picture of the moon with your cell phone.
There's just not a lot of them out there. We need to get our top minds on this, Chris. I don't know it's going to take.
But the most pressing thing that's happening in 2022.
That is no doubt, but you know, it's just like you said, it's one of those things. Oh, that's really cool. Okay, you know, but when you look into it and say why was this a super flower blood moon? I've got no idea.
Who knows who names it? I do think every time I see another lunar eclipse, I'm always sort of amazed. I told my daughter this last night. I said, you know, think about a time, you know, centuries ago, and when people didn't really know what the heck was going on.
Right.
And to see that going on without an explanation was just a little interesting. But now we know why it happens, and now we can predict. Like, I think we know the next 1,000 lunar eclipse for the next 1,000 years. They've already like calculated all of that, and so it's amazing what we can figure out with just math. But at the same time, it's just like, hey, that's cool, you know, and it's what it is.
Right. No, if this was a different time and a different day and age, people probably would have predicted that was the end of the world right there last night.
Sure. I think maybe yesterday people were probably doing that as well.
So. There was probably a small group out there, Chris. Chris Vanderveen, Director of Special Projects for 9 News. Chris, obviously a really, really difficult weekend for many people across our country. I was talking about this and with the Buffalo shooting. What's frustrating about this is that it seems like there were enough warning signs, but there was just not enough done to prevent this from happening.
Yeah, and I think it goes along with that adage of this idea that you only need to miss one. And I do think there are instances, and this is not to excuse what happened in Buffalo, but I do think it sort of presents the challenge as to how to prevent these things, is that, you know, you can catch 100 of these wannabe would-be shooters. You don't catch one, and something like this happens. And that's how much is at stake with these types of measures and trying to figure out who's capable of violence. Because as we talked about on your show numerous times, mental illness does not equate to violence. But some people who are mentally ill can be violent. And because of that, and because of, you know, them putting out threats, and what constitutes a threat, what constitutes an actionable threat, those types of things are really, really challenging for law enforcement. And when we look back and say, well, goodness, we should have seen this, and maybe in this instance, we absolutely should have. But at the same time, it's sort of it is that inherent challenge in trying to sort of say, hey, who's capable of doing this and who is just a blowhard? Because, like, I'll be honest with you, working in a newsroom, any journalist works in a newsroom, there are threats on a fairly consistent basis. And so what constitutes a threat that somebody isn't just sort of like shouting into the void and is capable of doing something like this? I think that's a central issue for this country to sort of expand on moving forward if we want to prevent these things. That's one of a number of things I think we have to address. But I think it's one of the critical things we have to address is when people are giving off warning signs, what are the signs specific that make it seem like it could be actionable.
No, that's exactly right, because you see on a number of occasions where there's, you know, high schoolers, even college students that are just young and dumb and throw stuff out there, and you see it and you're like, you shake your head at it. But this instance, there was more behind it, and it opens up a whole new can of worms. And we've talked about this, unfortunately, Chris, in the year and a half that I've been having you on, is that you don't know what the true intent is behind it. And we also know that this will quickly turn to a political debate, and then something else will happen. And unfortunately, this will lose our focus on how do we truly snuff out evil.
Well, and this is really what we have to do. We have to figure this out. It was a couple years ago where we looked at every mass shooting, every school shooting, at least, over the course of, I think, 5 years. And, it was a large percentage, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was a very large percentage that there were overt threats, overt warning signs before this all happened. People don't just snap. I mean, we have this idea that people just do that. But when they're involved in these types of mass shootings, and it's very clear in the Buffalo shooting, that this is thought out for a long time. We go back to Columbine here in Colorado, and how long, when you look into the research of those two kids that were responsible for it, how long they thought about it. And so there are warning signs throughout. The question is, I think all threats have to be treated seriously, but at what point do you think, this is something different, and this is something that somebody is actually planning?
Well, and what are the steps? I mean, how do you deliberate those differences?
I don't know, and I think that's really the charge for this country moving forward, is how do you figure that out, and because we can have, and there's absolutely discussions that could be had about mental illness, about access to guns, about all sorts of things, but I think this is one of those things that is really sort of top of mind, and the problem is that it doesn't lend itself to any sort of easy answer, I don't think. I think there's more that can be done, and there's really smart people that know a heck of a lot more about this than I do in terms of research and what's being done, and there's a lot of really great work on this. But this, to me, is really the fundamental question that gets overlooked time and time again through these nonsensical political debates that we always have after one of these shootings, is that this conversation gets lost. And we revert back to our old sort of tribes of, like, here, you know, I'm going to get mad about this, I'm going to get mad about this. And honestly, a lot of times those are just sort of presenting really simplistic solutions that really won't go anywhere. And that's probably partially by design, because they're people aren't terribly interested. I mean, people say that they're interested in fixing this, but when you say, oh, it's just this, and you do nothing to sort of fix that problem, you're not really terribly interested in fixing it.
Well, and the vitriol and hate that is being spewed on both sides right now on whatever social media platform that there is out there, it kind of blurs that line even a little bit more about, you know, separating the true, threats from just people spewing stuff.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think that there is a unique nature, not terribly unique, sadly, in terms of history, but there is a defining characteristic of this shooting as well, is that the person responsible for it, the teenager responsible for it, was sort of steeped in a very sort of dark world, a racist world, an anti-Semitic world that really he had sort of like fostered online. And I think that's something to be aware of as well. And to sort of pretend that doesn't play a role here doesn't make sense either. Now, where he was radicalized is sort of another topic and certainly worthy of some further discussion. But to ignore that too as well wouldn't make sense, because I think that is a defining characteristic of this mass shooting. Not only did you have somebody who planned it, but somebody who intentionally put out his own words online to try to inspire other people to do the same thing based upon a backwards and racist and awful and evil type of mindset that this kid had.
Yeah. No, I couldn't have said it any better. And there's no doubt that that needs to be reported on. There needs to be a deeper dive into that. I think as we look more at cybersecurity and just exactly what people are looking at and looking for, that will come to the forefront even more. And this is happening right on the heels of the possibility of almost an FCC for social media, right? This is being proposed for a panel of people picked by the president to monitor these social media sites. I think this is something we're going to start to see more and more regulation for what people can and can't say and do or not do on social media sites.
And I'll be honest with you, the journalist in me is not terribly comfortable with that idea because it's this idea that, like, oh, the president's going to pick people. Like, that alone makes it political, right? That alone, that the president is going to pick people that are going to decide what is good and what is not good online, seems like it's like riddled with peril. And I think at the same time, it's like, I also understand the desire to want to do something about this, because there is, I mean, you talk about radicalization, there is absolutely radicalization that's taking place online of young, typically young white males. And because of that, what do we do about that as well? And I think that's a problem that does need to be addressed. And that, like, you know, we joke a lot about the nonsense that is online. I mean, we both know that there is a boatload of nonsense online. Some of this is really rotten, and some of this sort of is like seizing upon the own insecurities of our own country when it comes to race relations. And because of that, it is sort of there are people that are very vulnerable to this. And I don't know how you stop that, because, again, the journalist in me is not comfortable with people coming in and saying, I don't like you saying that. But it's the it's not the government's job to do that. But at the same time, I don't know how you address it. And so I'm sort of stuck in this issue because I'm not sure how you fix it.
No, and at the end of the day, like we said, evil comes in all shapes and forms. How do we see it before it's too late, so that we can minimize these types of events? Because I'll tell you what, I'm tired of jumping on at 6 a.m. and talking about it, right? I mean, everyone's tired of that and mourning for the people who lost loved ones in this and innocent people who lost their lives because of evil. And how do we do that? I mean, this is a topic, like you said, that there's really, really smart people are talking about, and I don't know what the clear-cut answer is.
Yeah, it sort of goes back to that if you see this, that Onion headline, I'm going to screw it up. It's basically this, like, the only country where this ever happened says there's no way to possibly prevent this from happening. Like, there's ways, like, there are things that we can do to sort of, like, prevent this, to try to sort of minimize this. But I also think, lost in this discussion, I think this every time when there's a mass shooting, and believe me, I've covered way more mass shootings than I ever want to cover, and I never want to cover another mass shooting. That being said, lost in that discussion is there is a problem, a massive problem in this country when it comes to violence. And there are, you know, there are underreported areas of violence, depending on where it happens, when it happens, those type of things. And these are the things that get a lot of attention, and they deserve to get a lot of attention. When 10 people die in a grocery store in Buffalo, New York, that is absolutely newsworthy. But at the same time, there is a lot of violence in this country. And how do we address that as well? I think that those are things that are just like, I can't help but think that a country that claims, I said this over the weekend, a country that claims to be the greatest country in the history of the world has a unique problem, a awful problem, a problem that is very distinctly American. And because and that makes me sort of sour on this idea. Like, if we really are the greatest country in the world, and I believe in the greatness of this country. But if we really are who we say we are, why do we have such a rotten problem in this country?
No, it's all questions worth being posed. Chris Vanderveen, Director of Special Projects for 9 News. Chris, I appreciate your time as always. What else are you watching for this coming week?
I hate to say it, and I'll make it very quick, and I'm not sounding up alarm bells on this. But I do think over the next few months, people are going to have to rewire their minds a little bit when it comes to COVID, because things are evolving around the world. They're evolving around the country. Cases are starting to go up in the United States. Cases have been going up in Colorado. It's not going away in a way. I think most people's mindset is like, it's over, it's done. And I really respect that idea that people want to move on from COVID. That being said, it's still around and the virus is continuing to evolve. And that's to me, that's something that people need to pay attention to, because I think come winter, if we don't have a better solution, I think we're going to have another round of problems come this winter. And I hate saying that. I really don't like saying that, but I think it's possible. Is it likely? I don't know. I hope not, but it certainly is possible. I think people should be paying attention to it. And I know, I can guarantee, I'm hearing people sort of saying, oh, Vanderveen, he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's stupid. We've moved on. Like, move on, fine. But the virus isn't moving on just yet, and I think that's going to lead to some problems moving forward.
Chris, I don't think, I think that you know what's going on, all right? I'm not one of those people, and that's why we talk with you every Monday. Thanks so much for your time, my friend. Thanks for the conversation. We'll look forward to chatting with you again next week.
You bet. Thanks.
Thanks. That's Chris Vanderveen, Director of Special Projects, 754. Got to get a break here. It's a Good Morning NOCO on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.